My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends. I'm just trying to make you some money. My job, not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. We're coronavirus 24/7 these days, and this purgatory could be with us until this epidemic runs its course, and we sure hope it does. While we wait for that to happen, any day can be colored by reports out of China on the number of people hospitalized, the number released, the number who died. That's why the market seems so listless today. Dow will be dipping 25 points, S&P inching up 0.18%, NASDAQ advancing 0.2%, which is good a place as any to roll out our game plan for next week. First off, as you know, we're closed on Monday for President's Day, but China's very much open. I fear another awful set of statistics, because anecdotally, the Chinese authorities, well, I don't know why more people don't say this, they don't know what they're doing. Look, they want people to go back to work because they want the GDP up. They don't want to let people down. So their tone can't be too discouraging. But the whole world is hanging on these numbers, because if this outbreak goes badly, it could turn into an existential crisis for the globe. If it gets there, you'll have executives fearing not just for the companies, but for their lives. That's right, their very lives. I think the new infections will keep climbing, and it'll color Tuesday's trading. But again, remember what I said from the very beginning. No one listened to me. Trust no numbers out of China. Don't trust them. What else matters on Tuesday? Walmart reports this also comes with an analyst meeting this time. Now, I heard a bunch of people predicting, analysts predict this week, that the quarter might be weak, although that's not clear to me at all. I think much of their worry goes back to Target's disappointing results. But if anything, I'm betting Walmart gained market share from Target and has lots of good things to say. We want to know how much they'll be hurt by the China slowdown, and in particular, whether their supply chain will be disrupted. In other words, they import, look, their food's domestic. They have got a huge amount of business that's, that is from domestic sourcing, but they have a lot of China. Now, maybe you don't want to bet something on something so volatile. Well, how about in that case, you bet on Medtronic. Medtronic. Remember the medical device maker? We see them when we go out to San Francisco. Now, this is going to be the last conference call for the now legendary CEO, Omar Ishrak. And I expect it to be real good. He's made shareholders a ton of money in his time. Wednesday, we might learn what Dish Network plans to do with the assets it's buying for next to nothing from Sprint and T-Mobile. Now, they pledged to build out a wireless network, and I think they're going to need some partners to make that happen. Or maybe they'll just tell us about the quarter and tease us about the future. That could be. Now, we also hear from Bausch Health, and that's a company formerly known as Valeant. You know, they come in all the time. And this thing's become a reliable fixture in the growth stock community ever since Joe Papa came in as CEO to fix the place up. Now, he's developed the habit of making the numbers. So unless Bausch reports on a real bad day for the coronavirus, I think the stock can go higher. Now, we've seen some incredible moves in the semi-stocks, haven't we? I mean, witness NVIDIA roaring today after an amazing quarter. We're going to spend more time talking about NVIDIA later in the show. How about Analog Devices, ADI? While it's nowhere near as exciting as NVIDIA, it's been a consistent winner thanks to its Internet of Things exposure. It's kind of the manufacturing industrial semi. Then there's Elanco Animal Health. Now, I've been a big fan of Zoetis, as you know. It's another animal health play, but it's had a big move. Elanco, on the other hand, not as good as Zoetis, all right? But Elanco, it's been a bit of a dud since it was spun off, and I like the odds on this one at this point. You know, I'm not a fan of oil, to put it mildly. The stocks have been abysmal performers, both because there's a glut, but also because Wall Street now cares about sustainability. Nearly every day that goes by, we hear more stories about divestments, and that block is gaining steam. The fossil fuel stocks tend to have no growth, dicey balance sheets, especially for natural gas, horrific fundamentals. The price of natural gas came and look at it. But there's one growth oil company I actually want to listen to, and that's Pioneer Natural Resources, which reports after the close. Now, these guys always play it straight. They'll give us the real skinny on where the industry is headed. I trust them. I know lots of people are very bummed about this negative stance from fossil fuels if you own the stocks. So if you hate hearing bad things about the industry, well, put your hands over your ears, because I'm doubling down right now. We are from Energy Transfer Partners, ET, the giant pipeline company at same day. And I think you're going to be able to figure out that we simply have too much pipe for ETP's own good. Now, I also want to make another further point. It has a very high yield, And yet I worry about the size of that yield, given what's been going on in the MLP situation. Avoid the stock. Well, Thursday, Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings reports. I think it's safe to say that the past is not prologue in the cruise industry. Right now, this whole industry is in crisis. You got a cruise ship quarantined off the coast of Japan that's filled with people who, to me, the Japanese are making into human guinea pigs for the coronavirus because none of them are allowed off the boat. Another ship was stranded in Asian waters. It didn't even have the virus yet. It was rejected by five ports until Cambodia generously allowed them in. I'm wondering just how many reservations have been canceled because of the disease. You don't want to be trapped on a cruise ship in the middle of an epidemic. So how can you invest in Norwegian here? I think it's too risky. And, you know, before the corona, I did like this stock very much. But I want them to make the case. We also get results from one of the worst performers in my travel trust. The embarrassing Viacom CBS. When Viacom finally merged with CBS, reuniting them after 15 years of separation, I never would have guessed we had a first-class ticket to shareholder hell. It's incredible how this company has done when it set out to do everything it said. It's consummating a merger that Wall Street considered impossible, but its stock is probably the most hated in the S&P 500. Well, why? Because it's all about cord cutting, and people are cutting the cord. The combination is what attracted me to this thing. But these days, Viacom CBS has to do a lot more to entice other shareholders. Until then, I'm talking about a broken stock. You want consistency? Vote for American Electric Power or Con Ed, which report in the morning and the afternoon, respectively. These are two of the three best utility stocks, along with Dominion Energy, who we're going to hear from this very night. I think Con Ed and AEP are absolutely worth owning ahead of the quarter, but those stocks have been, whoa, smoking, all right? We hear from Domino's, too, and I want to know if the company is still under pressure from these cheap online delivery platforms. I'm talking about Postmates, DoorDash, two privately held companies that can afford to burn through cash because, well, they're playing with venture capital money. The competition's hurt them, but the action in the stock, particularly today for Domino's, tells me that maybe there's some good things happening. It has traded incredibly well this week. Now, here's one that you know I've been behind. It's been struggling of late. Ventas. Will Ventas be able to pull out of its tailspin? This was my favorite healthcare real estate investment trust, or REIT. And it's come under fire lately because it's missed its own forecast thanks to an oversupply of nursing homes. At least they were like on the up and up and saying, listen, we missed it. I'm betting CEO Deb Cafaro gets the story back on track. She's historically been a bankable chief executive. Plus, Ventas is paying you a 5.3% yield to wait for the turn that I think Deb is going to engineer. The cybersecurity stocks have become a little problematic of late. Now, one of my favorite, Zscaler, reports after the close, and its stock has been sneaking back up after some real turbulence. Makes sense to me. Zscaler does cloud security, and I think that area remains a hot area. I think that Zscaler is going to be fine. I really do. I know. I mean, CyberArk was a bummer, and it didn't act that well. But I think this one's a good one. Finally, Friday brings us to Deere, and regular viewers know that I'm partial to the farm equipment maker. What worries me, though, is that the coronavirus has the whole agricultural complex stalled. The group's been doing terribly. But never fear, this is an election year. And in election years, farmers tend to get big handouts, even bigger than the usual subsidies. Bottom line, as we head into next week, remember, every night China puts out new coronavirus numbers. They may be fiction, they may be fact. Probably something in between. But the veracity doesn't matter. Until the outbreak burns itself out, the corona statistics, and not earnings, will continue to control the day-to-day action. I need to go to Bob in Michigan. Bob!
Booyah, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a longtime investor, but only a recent convert to Jimmy Chill. But I'm wondering about Merck. It's been such a good performer for 2 to 3 years now, but they recently announced a spinoff of some of their products to a new company. Their stock price is off of close to $10 from their 52-week high. But Keytruda sales were up 45%, so I'm unsure what's next. Is this a buying opportunity?
I have said, Bob, that it was not a buying opportunity, and I'm going to change my mind right here. Because when it got to 3% yield, that was enough for me. Buying St. Merck at 3% with a 14 multiple, I am ready to start the position. Now, the world is hanging on these coronavirus numbers. That's really what people talk about. Expect those to color all of next week's trading. On Mad Money Tonight, trouble in Toyland? Well, I got to tell you, we got Mattel on and was tumbling after earnings. Is it a red flag or is it a buying opportunity? Let's talk to the CEO. Then there's still plenty of unknowns in this market. So which defensive plays could be worth circling back to? You know, if I've emphasized the group, I've got an unlikely one that you may really like. And Dominion just committed to reaching net zero emission by 2050. I'm going to find out what that means for the stock when I sit down with the CEO. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
All right, what the heck happened to the stock of Mattel today? The iconic toy maker behind Barbie, Hot Wheels, Fisher-Price, put in a seemingly solid quarter last night. While their sales came in a tad light, down 3% year over year, they still delivered a terrific 8-cent earnings beat off a 3-cent basis. Management's full-year forecast looked impressive. Initially, Mattel's stock soared in after hours. It was up 5% at one point. Makes sense. But then the enthusiasm faded, stock opened flat, and then by 10:30, it had turned negative, and it finished the day down 3%. The problem. According to some analysts, this was a low-quality beat. Most of the gains here are coming from cost cuts, not from any strength in the toy business, which many think is in rough shape. My view. Look, Mattel's been turning itself around. If they can generate much better-than-expected profitability with slightly subpar sales, well, who knows how well they'll do when the revenues go up. So could it be worth buying into this weakness? Let's check in with Ynon Kreiz. He's the chairman and CEO of Mattel. Get more insight into this confusing quarter and its turnaround. Mr. Kreiz, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be here.
Okay, so you know, I'm going to posit something and you take it. I think people are misunderstanding what's happening. You cleaned up everything, including costs, in 2019. In 2020, beginning with the Netflix-Mattel deal, you are now playing offense.
Absolutely right. 2019 was an inflection point in our turnaround. We stabilized top line after 5 years of consecutive decline. We managed to significantly improve profitability and became positive free cash flow for the first time in 3 years. So the turnaround is working. And when it comes to our revenue performance, we actually grew revenue in every geographical region and in 5 out of the 6 categories where we operate. So we're very happy with the performance. We grew market share in the fourth quarter and retain our global leadership position for the year.
Now, you have what I would describe as being a very attractive entertainment slate. When I first met you, you were saying that Mattel's going to be a platform. When I see, for instance, a Masters of the Universe series coming, I'm thinking this is what's going to spur demand for Mattel in 2020.
Absolutely. Our strategy is to transform Mattel into an IP-driven, high-performing toy company. We own one of the strongest catalog of film, children and family entertainment franchises in the world. And what you're seeing now with Masters of the Universe, as well as 8 movies in total that we announced between 2018 and 19, is a perfect example for what is coming. Masters of the Universe is a great franchise, one of the great mythology, superhero mythology, 2 shows with Netflix, another movie coming, expect more to arrive.
Now, in the meantime, you've re-energized Barbie. I have to point out, and people have to understand how important this is, 9th consecutive quarter of growth. Where can that franchise go if it grew 9% to $1.2 billion, highest full-year gross sales in the last 6 years?
Exactly. Our purpose as a company is to empower the next generation to explore the wonder of childhood and reach the full potential. And you couldn't have a better flag carrier than Barbie to promote diversity and inclusion and inspire girls to fulfill their potential and be anything they want. Barbie is on a run. As you said, we just achieved our highest year of sales after 6 years. Barbie has been the number one fashion property globally for each of the last 4 years, and the best is yet to come. We have some great product innovation that we're introducing this year. just can't wait to show you more.
Well, speaking of can't wait, I can't wait to hear what you're going to talk about with American Girl at the toy festival. And I have to believe that you've got a plan, because that does have to turn around.
Exactly. American Girl is in turnaround. It is one of the most iconic, cherished brands in the industry. It has great legacy, great heritage, and deep, engaged fan base. We're now in the first year of a turnaround. We're launching a new strategy under a new leadership. We're enhancing the retail experience. We're launching new content, new product architecture, great experience in the stores. Again, it's a turnaround. It will take time, but we are very firm believers in the potential and the future of the brand.
I know you as a total no-nonsense guy. I need a truth-on-the-ground appraisal of a very dynamic, fluid situation, which is China and the coronavirus. I have to believe that you've checked this out. You've made some decisions about how to handle it. Tell me what's really going on.
So first, I should say that our thoughts are with the people affected, our people on the ground. We're taking all the necessary actions to protect their well-being, their health and safety. We have a team of experts in the region that are looking to minimize the disruption. We have the ability to mobilize some resources, shift inventories, leveraging our production capabilities and relationship with third parties. And so far, we're okay. If this lingers, it will have an impact, just like it will on the rest of the world. But we believe we have, relatively speaking, a good standing. We're in a better position than the rest of the industry because of our size, our liquidity, the way we design our manufacturing footprint, which is now becoming a competitive advantage. And we hope that we'll be able to mitigate the disruption. Of course, if this lingers, it will be tougher. But for the time being, we just have to wait and see and react as things evolve.
I know you took over. You said you're going asset light. You are, again, completely true to your word. Last question. Where is the best place to build a toy if China's offline?
Well, capital light is a key part of our strategy. We, as of now, reduced three of the factories we consolidated or closed in China, Mexico, and Indonesia. We recently announced that we're closing another factory in Canada. And this is all part of a campaign to achieve more efficiency, higher performance, and better output from our manufacturing footprint. We are also in the process of reducing the number of items we manufacture by 30% by the end of 2020. This is all part of our structural simplification effort, which has been a headline driver for our cost savings, and really designing a company that is more progressive, more dynamic, more flexible, that is able to progress and capture value from our incredible asset base. This is really part of a journey. We're not done this year. There's more coming. We expect to achieve $50 million of savings in 2020 from our Capital Light project. And this is on top of the $875 million of savings, run rate savings, that we achieved as of the end of 2019. So a lot of efficiency to capture, dropping to the bottom line, and helping us drive growth in the long term.
All right. Well, look, the story is it just gets better and better every time I talk to you. You're completely true to your word about what you said you'd do. And I think you'll do the same in 2020, which is good news for shareholders. Thank you to Enon Christ. Good to see you, sir.
Thank you so much, Jim. Thank you.
Man of his word. Told me he was going to do everything that he's ended up doing. I think the story's a good one. You do have some coronavirus risk, obviously. That's Enon Christ. He's a chairman and CEO of Mattel. And money's back after the break. Even after a couple of down days for the Dow Jones Industrial Average, this market still had a remarkable run. So therefore, what do? I get worried that it might not be sustainable. It only takes one bad set of coronavirus numbers, maybe something from this weekend, to send the averages into a tailspin. That's why I keep circling back to the classic defensive stocks, because this outbreak's putting a real dent in global economy. And when the world slows, well, you got to have some safety in your portfolio, which is why I keep trying to expose you to these names. For instance, last week we spoke to Clorox. You know, I think that's the perfect coronavirus play. We own it for the Chapel Trust. Don't forget, bleach can kill everything, including the coronavirus, because the surface does matter. It's where a lot of it's transmitted. So tonight I've got another one for you. It's a long-suffering consumer packaged goods name that used to be the best in the group. It suddenly got its group back again. It's called Colgate-Palmolive. Here's a company that makes toothpaste, soap, deodorant, laundry, detergent, all sorts of personal care products. Think Irish Spring, Speed Stick, Ajax, Tom's of Maine. I mean, doesn't this look, think about it. Doesn't this look like what's in your bathroom? If I open the cabinet, half this stuff is going to fall out, well, unless you have it secured. The thing about Colgate-Palmolive is that for the last couple of years, it's been a dicey operator, inconsistent. It was an inconsistent earner. Like Tony Soprano, the stock market prefers good earners. As a result, the stock has underperformed. It's been bouncing between the high 50s and the mid-70s for the better part of five years. In the last 6 weeks, though, Colgate's come alive. It's up 11% for the year, with most of that move coming after the company reported a blowout quarter 2 weeks ago. And stocks that do that rarely stop at that percentage. They go higher. And you know what? After spending years lost in the wilderness, I think the future is looking bright for Colgate, and I think it's a buy. What makes me believe in this turn? Consider where the company's coming from. Colgate's main problem has been a lack of growth, something that often happens to these big consumer packaged goods plays. From 2014 through 2016, the company experienced three straight years of declining sales, and that's thanks in part to a sprawling multi-year restructuring effort. By the end of 2017, it seemed like they had their house in order. But then the business stalled out with another contraction in the second half of 2018. What went wrong? Okay, first off, Colgate is a truly global company. This one, even though you see it all the time in the store, you know, only 21% of its business from North America. That's very low for these kinds of companies. 48% coming from emerging markets. Now, that's a great source of growth, but it also carries some unique risks. When you get the vast bulk of your sales from overseas, well, guess what? You're at the mercy of one of the worst markets in the world, the currency market. Between the strong dollar in 2018 and declining currencies in Latin America, their most important region, by the way, Colgate's numbers just took a real hit. Remember, a strong dollar means their foreign sales translate into fewer greenbacks, and South America's putting in way fewer greenbacks. Second, thanks in part to these foreign exchange fluctuations, as well as raw cost inflation, higher transportation costs, we talk about a lot, Colgate had to force through some substantial price increases, especially in countries that had devalued the currencies. They had to do it to protect the margins. But obviously, price hikes, well, you took the economy class, probably they drive away customers. Put it all together, and these problems translated into a series of very weak numbers in 2018, and weak numbers give you a weak stock. Of course, Colgate managed to rebound in the first half of last year. They had a nice relief rally. Some of that's because falling interest rates made their dividend more attractive, although it currently yields only 2.2%. But some of it was company-specific. In April, Colgate delivered a modest beat that was good enough for Wall Street, with management forecasting 2 to 4% organic growth. That's exactly what investors wanted to see. Company was able to raise prices without sacrificing volume. That is a big change. Now, fast forward to July. You got another robust quarter. This time, management told us their organic growth would come in at the high end of the previous forecast. Stock shot up to 75. However, Wall Street started feeling more bullish about the economy last fall, as I've told you over and over again. So investors rotated. They swapped out of defensive stocks like Colgate, and they put their money into more cyclical names. It didn't help that when the company reported again in November, the numbers were just okay. While the headline results were basically in line, and management raised their organic growth forecast slightly, a bunch of analysts took issue with the softer-than-expected margins. Still, the stock bottomed in a few days later, but it was in the mid-60s. Now, you got a little bit of levitation in the run-up to the end of the year and the first couple weeks of January, but Colgate didn't really come roaring back until it reported its most recent and stunning, stunning results 2 weeks ago. Oh, boy, this quarter was different. While the earnings were in line, the sales, top line, much better than expected, up 5.5 year over year. Pricing was up 1.5%. Global unit volume of 5.5%. The organic sales rising an outstanding 5%. And you got some nice margin expansion. Guys, that's the holy grail. Best of all, management gave you a very bullish forecast for 2020. Noel Wallace, whom I've not met, the new CEO, guided for 3 to 5% organic sales growth this year. You know, I think he's the only one in this whole consumer package group that I have not met. He predicts more gross margin expansion, too, and mid to high single-digit earnings growth. Very impressive. How did they pull it off? After years of struggling to generate growth, Colgate became a much more consistent operator. It's a good earner again. They made that happen by investing in their brands and forcing through price increases to maintain their margins. Plus, it doesn't hurt. Guess what? The dollar's been weakening, which gives them a lot more breathing room than the rest of the world. This is the ultimate weak dollar play right here. There are two more factors at work. Since this fellow Wallace took over as CEO last year, the company's made a series of acquisitions. They bought this Filarga's skincare business for $1.69 billion. I really love the skincare business because I follow Estee Lauder, and this is a good piece of it. This is the premium anti-aging brand, and it's part of a broader strategy where Colgate's doubling down on higher margin products. The Filarga deal's already giving their sales a nice boost. It was really smart. Then last month, they announced a small transaction, picking up Hello Products. That's a rapidly growing toothpaste and mouthwash brand. They're really getting a lot of the toothpaste business. I used to use this. I use Sensodyne now. But these are really good. This is a real good one. The second factor, Colgate's long been a leader in sustainability. For years, no one on Wall Street really cared about this stuff. Think water conservation, reducing plastic packaging. Now, though, there's a lot of money floating around that's specifically earmarked for sustainable investments, and subtly it matters. So can the stock continue to climb? Let me give you the bottom line here. The stock feels a little fully valued, trading 24 times next year's estimates, but we're going to get some bad days in this market. This is the one to buy on a market-wide pullback. I think you got to pounce. Colgate's exactly the kind of defensive name that could be worth buying into the teeth of a panic that I expect now because of the coronavirus outbreak. And I've got to tell you, panic's a possibility. And when it happens, Colgate, Palmolive. It's like 56.65, you know what I mean? Let's go to William in Tennessee. William.
Booyah, Jimmy Chill.
Oh, man, I've been chilling. What's up?
Calling in regards to Yeti, ticker symbol YETI.
Yes.
I'm surprised the stock has pulled back over 5 points despite a positive beat on earnings and a good 2020 outlook. I followed your successful guidance to pick this one up slowly as it sells off in the past. Would this be another time?
Yes. Ben Stoddard and I, my research director, we went over and over, and we feel the exact same way. This stock's being pushed down. It shouldn't be. It had a brilliant quarter, and there's been shorts leaning on this thing from day one. They've got a good product. I think they do a good job, and I thought the stock should have been up after that quarter. All right, Colgate-Palmolive. Yes, Colgate of all things. Is exactly the kind of defensive name to buy into a panic. You know, this was the best stock I recommended for years in the 80s and 90s. I think it's back. I think you should pounce next time it pulls back. Now, much more Mad Money, including my exclusive with maybe one of the most forward-looking utility companies in the country, Dominion. With dividend stocks suddenly back in style, is it time to circle back to that company? I've got the CEO. Then, the stock beat goes on, but is it sustainable? I'm giving my take and what it means for your portfolio. And, of course, all of your calls, rapid fire, and tonight's edition of The Lightning Round. Stay with me. With bond yields plunging, dividend stocks are suddenly back in style on the Wall Street Fashion Show, especially the utilities, which are red hot. Now, are any of them still worth buying after this move? I want you to consider Dominion Energy. That's the big East Coast utility. It's got a little bit of everything. Regulated electrical and gas business, Nat Gas Pipeline, liquefied natural gas export terminal in Maryland. Oh, and they're even a major player in renewables. Now, Dominion reported a strong quarter earlier this week, and the stock's been on a tear lately. It made a new high today, but even up here, it still sports a bountiful 4.3% yield. Could it have more upside? Let's take a closer look with Tom Farrell, the chairman, president, and CEO of Dominion Energy. Get a better read in the quarter and where his company is headed. Hey, Tom, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, great to be with you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, same to you. I see Facebook a terrific Valentine's Day present yesterday with a renewable energy partnership. And I want you to talk about it because what this is about is when a forward-thinking utility does something terrific to get business in where everybody wins. So you've got the floor.
Thanks, Jim. You're referring, of course, to our a contract we entered into with Facebook to build solar farm with them. We also have done one with Arlington County. We have others with Microsoft, Amazon is moving their eastern headquarters to Northern Virginia in Arlington County. We've been working with them on that. We have other, they have a lot of data centers here. We've been working with that whole community for years now to help them meet their needs and desires to go to as all renewable if they can get there and as quickly as they can. And we're looking at trying to do the same thing if we can with the offshore wind farm we plan on building.
Well, one of the things when we went out to see Satya Nadella at Microsoft, I know he wants to have, he has these different scopes where he thinks that he can help change really the food chain of energy, so to speak. Most of the energy companies have are trying. Why are you so far ahead? Why are you able to do these things when others keep saying they're trying?
Well, we got thoughtful about it, I think, probably half a decade ago. And started trying to, instead of just saying, hey, it's difficult for us to do that because of the way the regulation works or whatever, we said, let's work with them, let's work with regulators to see if we can come up with methods that are work for them, making sure that the extra cost, if there is any, and a lot of it can be done without any extra cost, make sure that whatever extra costs there are don't filter through to the rest of our customer base. So that's what we've been working on for, you know, most of, about probably half a decade, 5 or 6 years.
Well, I wish others would listen because your compound annual growth rate is still above the whole industry.
Yes, it is. We, you know, just even 5 years ago, Jim, we had very little solar on our system. We wanted to make sure the cost got to a place where it was effective and cost efficient for our customers before we started deploying it in large quantities. We've gone from having none to the fourth largest utility holding company for solar in the country in just 4 years, 5 years.
Congratulations for doing that. You've also put out a goal that I think is very hard for a lot of energy companies to do, but I bet you beat it. Introduced a net zero emissions by 2050 target, carbon methane emissions. I mean, these are very difficult for utility to meet.
They are, and we're, you know, we have a, it's even more complicated for us than most because we also have a very large, we have a lot of local gas distribution companies in our company. We have a large gas transmission storage business. You mentioned Cove Point, our LNG export facility, import and export facility, a few minutes ago. So we worked very hard on this. We'd had a goal to reduce methane emissions by 50% by 2030, and our carbon, we'd already reduced carbon by 50%, twice the industry average by the time we got to this year. To reduce it all the way to 80 by 2050. But we worked hard on that over the last most of a year because we don't want to announce a target of net zero without seeing a way to get there. And we became convinced that we can do it through a number of programs. We're already the largest investor in renewable natural gas with some of our partners in the United States. And there are other things we're going to do. We are going to need research and development to help with this and public policy support. But we see a path to getting there.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned this research and development. I think that when you, for instance, when you talk with the plastics companies, you're not hoping that they recycle more. You're hoping that they come up with a new technology that allows it to biodegrade. If we were to be able to give someone in science, let's say, $5 billion to develop something, what do you really want to make it so that your footprint's smaller?
I think the two things that I would ask them to concentrate on would be cracking the code on effective storage for electricity at vast scale. Americans, we use electricity at an enormous scale. And the storage for it now is really bits and pieces other than pumped storage, which we own the largest one in the world, actually, and operated in the Virginia Mountains. And the other would be, and this will be controversial for some, is coming up with modular nuclear reactors, much smaller, safer, quicker to install.
Hey, one last question. Have you ever spoken to Elon Musk?
Have not. I've been at a conference with him, but I haven't spoken to him personally.
He once proposed, at a dinner party I was at, the first one that you mentioned of the two things. He said it's going to happen, and he said he would do it. Tom, I got to tell you, this guy, when he puts his mind to it, maybe he's got some ideas, and he can share them with the industry.
That would be great. This, what he has worked on through one of his companies is what they call a wall. I can't remember exactly the name they use for it. It's a standard set of lithium batteries that you can use for short-term storage. What I'm talking about is long-term, hours and hours and hours, at a very, very large scale, not just for a house or a business. And the other thing we really need help with is carbon capture and storage. That's another that's part of the international organizations looking at climate change have said we really got to crack the code on that, too.
Well, terrific. And thank you for all you do. And congratulations on your all-time high. And you deserve it. I want to thank Tom Farrell, the chairman, president, CEO of Dominion Energy. And I know if there are other utilities out there, you can challenge me in this. But I think he's the most forward-thinking when it comes to utilities and carbon footprint today. That money's back in. It is time! It's time for the light! What is that? That's about and then the lightning round is over. Are you ready? Ski Dad! It's time for the light round. I'm going to start with Michael in Florida. Michael!
Good evening, Dr. Chill.
Doctor?
Dr. Chill. Sounds like a supervillain.
True.
So, nice, soft, easy booyah from sunny Tampa, Florida.
Oh, the Super Bowl!
There you go.
You bet.
I was reading an article the other day, and this guy mentioned three stocks that might be used to play the autonomous driving that might be coming. Mm-hmm. And one of the ones he listed was BlackBerry.
Well, he was wrong, and that's interesting. That guy, don't go breaking my heart with that stock. I won't go breaking my, don't go breaking my heart with BlackBerry. Let's go to, but thank you for those kind comments from the Dr. Jill. Let's go to Tom in North Carolina. Tom.
Mr. Kramer, thank you very much for taking my call and for everything that you do.
Thank you.
My stock is KeyBank.
I think KeyBank is a nice, simple story. Gets a little yield, little growth. That's fine. I need Patrick in California. Oh, Patrick.
Hey, booyah, Jimmy Chill.
Yo.
I need your opinion on Gilead. Gilead's remdesivir.
I've got so many great drug stocks. I don't need Gilead. By the way, you see Warren Buffett picked up his position in Biogen. I think that you should go for AbbVie. I think AbbVie's better. So is Bristol Myers. Let's go to Art in California. Art.
Yes, Professor Kramer. I would like to know your opinion concerning the purchasing of Home Depot or Alibaba.
Oh, geez, if you put a gun in my head of those, I say take the gun away from my head. I happen to think that Home Depot is terrific. My Chapel Trust owns it. But I'm not going against Alibaba. Because they had a good quarter. Let's go to Dominic in California. Dominic.
My grandson has a question for you.
Sure.
Jimmy Chill, booyah. I'm a 14-year-old investor. In October, I called about this company at $22 a share, and you did your homework and many other segments on it, and you said it's great. With its earnings on Tuesday, should I keep continuing to be a buyer of the medical aesthetic maker InMode, ticker
INMD? Yes, InMode. No, we're believers. We wouldn't leave that one even if we tried. I think you should stick with it. 14-year-olds, what? I thought 14-year-olds weren't interested in the market. I thought they didn't care. I thought they just wanted index funds. Wrong! Let's go to Hector in California, please, Hector.
Hey, Hector, hey, Jimmy, this is your boy Hector from sunny Northern California.
Hector,
I wanted your thoughts on the solar industry as a whole, but in particular, a certain company, Solar Edge Technology, ticker SEDG.
Look, you know, because of your state and the rules, these solar companies have gone up. They're great specs, and this one is a great spec, and that's how I look at it. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round!
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
There's an undercurrent to this earnings season that you might not recognize if you're new to the business, so I got to explain it to you. Right now, companies are being rewarded not just for beating the numbers, but for giving you one glorious word, and that word is visibility. Okay, this is a word that's going out of fashion in recent years. Ever since the Great Recession, most companies have been loath to talk about visibility. It became too dicey. Too many businesses told us they had visibility when it turned out they didn't. And when they're disappointing, Well, guess what? Their stocks got obliterated.
So why bother to stick your neck out?
Why set yourself up? Now, though, visibility is making a comeback. Maybe enough time has passed. Maybe business is just better. I don't know. What do I know we are seeing? Well, we're seeing stocks run up into earnings and then go still higher because management's able to make a claim that the future's brighter than the past. They see it. Take NVIDIA, the uber Cramer fave semiconductor company with some of the greatest visibility into its future of any company on earth. And that is not hyperbole. Even though this stock flew into the so-called print, it jumped again because they gave you not only a beat and a raise, but they talked about a clear path in conversational artificial intelligence. We're talking about technology that can answer basic questions from you, your voice, within 300 milliseconds, almost instantly, regardless of the idiom. So can you imagine getting in your car and you say, hey, take me to the nearest Starbucks, or how about, where's the nicest hotel? Where's the Four Seasons around here, for heaven's sake? And it's like, not, it's like smarter than we are. NVIDIA is going to have that. AI inference, it's here right now. And this story is still so early that there's nothing to fear about the future. It won't be like that year from hell when Bitcoin miners overloaded on NVIDIA's graphic cards because they thought there was gold in them thar hills. When Bitcoin collapsed, they returned the chips. NVIDIA got stuck with a ton of excess inventory. This time is very different, as we saw when the company reported last night, excess inventory. Thing of the past. Now, why does this kind of visibility matter? Because it allows the analyst to model the future with more accuracy. It lets them say, the stock looks expensive on this year's numbers, as it does, but it looks very cheap on 2023 estimates. And that, more than anything else, is why money managers paid up for NVIDIA today, up $19. Who else is in the visibility boat? Well, no one's really where NVIDIA is, frankly. But I felt that RingCentral, which is converting thousands of businesses to its customer-centric cloud-based communications platform, is one of them. They have dozens of clients on the website talking about how they saved money, generated more business, had happier customers. Brinker, the parent company of Chili's, said the payback for RingCentral was pretty much instant. And that's how this company knows it can keep growing. That's why Vlad, he did a great number. Then there's Alteryx. Now, this is one that you probably, unless you've watched the show, haven't heard of. I've been a huge backer of it. This is the data analytics company with a product that I think seems vastly superior to Microsoft's Excel, which is still the way people do things. All of these stocks have rallied, then rallied again as they guided up tremendously. Alteryx surged nearly 10% today. I was trying to get them on the show. It won't be long. Now, we've also gotten some raised forecasts from FANG, my acronym for Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google, but they don't give you the kind of visibility that this market has started to crave. In fact, the only big tech company with great visibility is the non-FANG Microsoft, with new clients coming like droves to Azure. That's their cloud platform. There again, as far as the eye can see, that's why it had accelerating revenue growth. You want to know what it takes for a stock to advance and then keep advancing after earnings? Listen for that word, visibility. If the company has it, I bet it's a stock worth buying. Stick with Cramer. Stay right there because you do not want to miss a CNBC special report on the coronavirus outbreak. It's hosted by my friend Tyler Matheson. It's coming up next. It will be excellent. Speaking of excellent, the NVIDIA quarter was as good as the stock being up 19. Why? It's the inference chip. It's because they have figured out both the data center, but more importantly, how a chip can be smarter than you. It can figure out the things you want. It is the ultimate in voice, and everybody wants it. The stock deserves to be higher. Like I said, there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you Tuesday. The CNBC special report begins now.